to go, our last talk for today. Volker Lendecke from Zernet and also a member of the Samba team is going to introduce or an introduction to T-Event Rec programming.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, that sounds different. So mem context, event loop context. Then arguments to that process. And as I've seen, the message to print, the interval, and the number of times we print this. Typical, you've seen that. What we then do is boilerplate code. We have a request that we return to the caller. And typically, we have sub-requests. And this is what we are using here. So we have the request that we return to the caller representing our asynchronous process that we are creating here. And this one has to spawn helper processes. And that's what we call subrec here, sub-request. And we have to maintain some state that remains valid throughout our asynchronous process. And that's what we call state. And this is a structure that we define above. Here we are. That's all information that we need to pass back and forth between our steps in the asynchronous process. Has anybody ever programmed really in Scheme or Lua or any language that has closures? Yeah. Essentially, this is our notion of a closure. We can't do it in C, but this catches all the variables that are needed. I mean, we all do it manually. It's not really a closure because C doesn't have them. If we had closures, everything would be easier here, but we have to manually create that and maintain state across the multiple steps. Anybody ever programmed in Scheme and call with current continuation? That's it. You want to go there. And we have to do this manually here, and it's kind of inspired by Lua and the coroutines in Lua. So we are creating that process. This does the following. It creates this request up here, this one here. It also initializes the state. It zeroes out the state, so it's initialized. So at this point, rec and the variable state is initialized. Again, boilerplate code. We have to transfer the variables that we were given on the stack to our quote-unquote closure that we have to keep across this whole asynchronous process. Okay. Then, ignore that piece first. This is for demonstration of a different item. Ignore that first. What we now have to do, this process, before printing its first message, wants to wait. And what we do here, we fire off a sub-request. This might be a complete HTTP request, sending off, coming back, and so on. This time, it's a completely simple thing. We just wait for a struct time val, number of seconds. It just waits. It could send out whatever, a notify request to an SMB server and wait for its reply. It's a sub request which is completely symmetric to what we are doing here. It also is a normal T-event rec representing a different asynchronous process. Wait for a second. Call us back when you're done. And this is what we are doing here. We can look at T-Event Wake Up Send. That is part of our already existing library of helper routines that do asynchronous processes. Very simple. You see our normal conventions here. It gets a teller context. It returns a T-Event Rec. It gets a T-Event context. And it gets its arguments that it needs. This particular one, okay, wait for 2 seconds. And call us back. Okay, in theory, this might fail because it has to allocate memory. And these two lines take care of that. What is it? In T-event rec nomem, we check whether the first pointer is null. And if so, we indicate this to the request that we are handing back up. So remember what you're doing here. We are initiating an asynchronous process. We haven't returned anything yet to our calling process. We are not in any event loop, not yet at all. But we want to return some error code here at this point. And because something in our setting up failed, we couldn't allocate the sub-request. Very rare event, but we want to take care of it. This is our helper routine that we can then later on just look at. And you will see very frequent calls t-event to t-event regnomem. If somewhere deep inside this asynchronous process, some memory allocation fails, we call this, and normally we just return. You will see that further down. Okay. What's this? This code here, this call up here, t-event wake up send, that created an asynchronous process waiting for 1 second, 2 seconds, 10 seconds. At some point in the future, that's finished. Something must happen. And this is our way to set a callback function to this one, to tell the sub-request, hey, please, when you're finished, here, to tell the sub-request, hey, please, when you're finished, call this function. And as a private pointer, as an argument, we get this main request. So when this wake up send has done its job, waited for a second, waited for 2 seconds, the function hello waited is called. And two lines down, you can see this hello waited function. And this is also part of our convention. This is not codified anywhere. But if you have these asynchronous multi-step processes, you want to read them almost as if they were synchronous and whatever sequential processes, not interrupted. And this is the reason why it is important that you have them upside down. Sorry, I mean, no really. In the sequence that the events happen. This involves some additional typing. The C language mandates that we declare any function that we use later in the code. And believe me, it's really worth putting these prototypes in here. And for some processes, you see like 10 prototypes. Believe me, it's worth it. Technically, we could have done the hello waited function up here and avoided these two lines, this one line of code. But this would have disturbed our way to read code, because we are used to sequential reading upside, from top to bottom. And so it's really worth putting these prototypes in. And whenever you do asynchronous programming and you submit that to Samba and I get to review that and it's not in that order, believe me, I will point that out to you. Because it's really worth it to have this, to read this complex stuff, asynchronous program to me still can be mind-boggling, to have that in the natural reading order. So we declared hello waited somewhere up. T-event wake up has done its job. And we go and get the sub-request that has just finished. And this here is completely boilerplate code again. We only have the sub-request that has finished. We get that as an argument in our callback function. Hey, I'm done. What we do is, essentially, we need to find our state again. We have allocated our state with the information we care about in this process. We have put these variables in. Oops. Come on, I want to mark this blue. Ah, these four lines, we need to get this variable back somewhere in our variable space. And the way this is set up here is the following. This one here is a routine to type safely get us back our private pointer here from the sub-request that we set the callback to. Type safely in the sense that we are expecting a pointer to a struct event rec in this private pointer, and this is actually being checked by Tellog magic. So if you get this wrong and pass in the wrong structure, you will get an abort at this point. Essentially, this is dynamic typing in C. But we are safe in that every Tellog object has its type, or rather a name, attached to it. So, I mean, this is a cast. This is not checked by the compiler. This is runtime checking. But you will get an abort if you get that wrong. At this point, you can be sure it's a TVN rec that you get back from this call. Same here. Little different. This piece here takes a request and gets us the data associated with this request. Where did that come from? That came from this tevent rec create. That's kind of implicit. So together with creating the request as such, the asynchronous process representation, we get this state. And we can retrieve this state from the request, again, with tevent rec data. And this is how we get our state. I mean, we have waited for a second. We are in a completely different routine. Now we need to know, wait a second, which message did we have to print? So we need that information here. This is also kind of boilerplate code, although this differs from request to request. I've told you, we have hello send, we have hello receive. This is our asynchronous process that we are programming here. Likewise, we have tevent wake up send, tevent wake up receive. Also, completely expected, we have sent off a wake up request. We are done with that. And from this wake up request, we have to receive a result. And the result from just waiting is not very interesting. But something internal might have gone wrong. And typically, when you program more complex asynchronous stuff, you will get pointer arguments in this routine, in this receive routine, essentially output parameters that get the results from this to your stack here. Essentially, whatever you would have, whatever you're waiting for, a buffer size t bufflen, what you would do here is something like that. You expect the receive routine to fill in your buffer this way. Not here. I mean, just waiting doesn't return anything useful, except for, yeah, we waited. The boilerplate piece is, right after retrieving that request, the result, we free the sub-request. We're not interested in that asynchronous process anymore that waited for us. Oh, did the wait. Yeah, David? Microphone, please, for the audio.
In this example where you're receiving a buffer back from your request, which memory context do you expect that to go on? So from the caller itself, or do you expect
the real one
a receive
would be,
request,
for example,
to feed in a Tellog context?
State. Assuming we have buff in our state. This is much closer to what you would really see. So we have in our state have the two variables buff and bufflen, and we have to pass in the buffer to T event wake up receive. And what we are passing in is the state as a Tellog context variable.
Okay.
So the prototype for this one would be?
So rather than using the context which we send So when we send this request, we could also, or the receive could use the talloc context used in that send.
Yeah, but the convention says, and this, we free this immediately.
Yes.
And the idea is that within this wake up process, you allocate anything from the request that was initially passed. But here, in the wake up receive, you do a talloc move to the other context that you just get handed in.
Okay.
So while this wake up process is running, the buffer is hanging off the initial memory context. You can see that here. Here we are, that one. We have our main request. Talloc child of that is state. And any sub-requests hanging off that are allocated from state. That's similar. If we had to allocate buffer, we would take state as the talloc parent of that buffer that has to live for this process. And when it's done, we get handed another talloc context so that after this receive function has been called, we're completely free to discard this sub-request. Metze, interrupt me if I, but that's the idea. Okay. We are back to, waiting doesn't return anything useful. So, waiting failed. How did we end up here? But yeah, something in the sub-request failed. What do we have to do? We have to indicate this, potentially. We have to indicate this in the process that we are in. Remember, we are in a larger asynchronous multi-step process. Something in between, some sub-request failed, indicated by a negative response from T-event wake up receive. We have to indicate this one step up. And this indication is happening by this T-event rec NT error, for example. This T-event rec NT error via some call stacks will trigger the callback that we were given to be called. That call chain can become very, very deep, but if we call this T-event rec NT error, somebody else who has done this T-event rec set callback on ourselves. Here we are calling T-event rec set callback on a sub-request. We have given our request to somebody else. That somebody else, the calling process, will have set this callback function. And when we when we indicate the error, something in our process has failed, up one level, that callback function will be called. And the expectation is that our receive function will be called at that point. Okay? So now we do our job. We have waited. We can do something useful. We can print a message. And this is not completely expected. We do our printf. We reduce the number of loops that we are supposed to do. If that goes down to zero, we indicate to our calling process, hey, we are done, successfully. That's our way to tell the calling process we are done successfully. If we still have loops to do later on, and this is here the case, we have to wait. We have to wait again. T-event wake up send, that's the asynchronous T-event rec way of waiting, wake up send. And this pretty much looks exactly the same as the function above. We're creating a sub-request. If the allocation of that sub-request failed, we just return it. This here will implicitly already call the parent process, but we are returning. And essentially, T-event rec salt set callback, sub-request, hello waited, we will get back here. in a sense, this function here can be viewed as a go-to statement in BASIC, good old BASIC. This is essentially a go-to statement. When done, go back up here, and so on. It's a bit more nicely wrapped, but that's a go-to statement. And that's the whole thing. Yeah, certainly. Postponed, but very similar to a go-to statement. Okay. Counterpart of the centric function. What we have to do here is we have to check whether the process that we have been performing has failed in between. That's our way to do it. We ask, has an anti-status type error been happening throughout this process? If so, return it. And if not, yeah, done. Okay. So this is essentially it. What you see here is we have created a kind of high-level process that waits a number of times, does something in between, and that also uses infrastructure that we have already created, this wait a couple of seconds infrastructure. How do we use this? This is how I kind of started out. This is a full program getting us into an asynchronous event loop. We are creating the event loop, which we call T-event context. And at the high level, somehow we need to indicate that we are done. You will see the reason for that a bit later. Okay, here we are calling hello send. 1 second interval, 5 times, print hello. When you're done with that, call this function. As a private pointer for this function, num done. Okay, I made an error somewhere down, but didn't really matter. Is a pointer to this integer. Let's look at this run test done function. It does nothing but increment the variable that it was given when done. If correctly programmed, it would ask hello underscore receive and check for an error and so on. Just for brevity, I just skip this. We don't really care whether this routine in between has errored. We're just done. So we're incrementing this num done, and we are done with that. So we do that multiple times. We print hello, we print world, we print samba xp 2 times with 3 seconds interval. We call the same callback routine, and the error made is I have to do this to put this to 3. Because we are calling 3 times this hello world done. And that's the central event loop of our fancy multi-process asynchronous program, event-based and so on, that, as I showed you at the start of my talk, just works. And the nice thing is, these processes are completely isolated, processes quote unquote. They're kind of completely isolated. We have dynamic memory allocation. We have very easy cleanup with our Talloc library doing all that hierarchical cleanup. And this is the event loop that you will find in all Samba processes. Essentially, it looks exactly like that. And you can attach any kind of event to that, and you can just rely on that working. And yeah, let me show you this program again. Yeah, you see it here. Lots of debug output. The dynamic nature should be that hello, after a second, we just print samba xp and so on. Yeah, that was my little talk. One thing I would like to point out to you is we have a relatively rich library around socket communication already. And two routines I would like to point out to you are write vsend and read packet send. We want to write something to a socket, and the nature of our nice SMB protocols usually say that we have multiple buffers that we want to send in a bunch, like some headers, some whatever. And we created this write vsend routine that asynchronously sends a struct IOVEC to a socket. And we have tevent queues here, and you can queue that up so that you have one socket and you want to send 10 packets. They shouldn't mix up in the multi-step process that we have here. So you can queue that up, and we have this error on, yeah, just bail out on readability. If the socket becomes readable during that process, you can say that, wait, this is an error. This is for these kind of single request response protocols. SMB doesn't work that way, but you have the option to say when the socket becomes readable while we are writing, just that's an error because we don't expect any response before we are done with the write process. That's an option here. So this is how you fire off a request. How do you read a request? That's our routine's read packet. I'm done, almost done. This is a bit more intricate. This is our way, with some fancy wrappers probably at some point, this is our way to read an arbitrary network packet from an arbitrary protocol packet from the wire. And this is rich enough to have several possibilities. What you do is you give it a socket, and usually, I mean for NetBIOS or for SMB, we have to read 4 bytes to get the length. You tell it to read 4 bytes, and in these initial 4 bytes, you are told this packet is 10 kilobytes long. So before, so what this does is it reads 4 bytes from the socket, and when it's done, it calls this callback function. And this callback function, as you see here, gets handed a buffer of what the read packet send routine has already read. And so when this callback is called the first time in the NetBIOS case, we get 4 bytes of buffer here. And this callback then, this more, how many more bytes do you want? Inspects that length field, says, oh, this is a 10 kilobyte SMB packet, returns 10. Yeah, 10 kilobyte, 10 times 124, the length. And it will be called again when these additional 10 kilobytes are called. And if that routine returns 0, then this says no more to read, we are done with the whole thing. And we have, so this is so flexible that you can do completely fixed packet length things, just give it initial size, no more function, we just read the initial size from the net in how many steps you get it, and no callback function. To whatever this, we have 4 bytes of length, and fixed length, and then whatever any number of bytes in as payload. To and even the nice way for ASN packets that LDAP is, you can do that here. The point with LDAP packets is you don't have a fixed 4 bytes of length packet preceding a packet. The length field itself is variable length in LDAP, and that also works with this kind of callback function. And so for the basic network request response, we are here. There's one kind of protocol that it does not really handle is it's the HTTP style protocol where you can only decide from the contents how long the packet is going to be. That really is not covered here, but that's kind of ugly to to really process in a general manner anyway. This does no buffering, by the way. We could add buffering, but not done yet. Yeah, that's my talk, essentially.
Thank you very much, Volker, for some very deep insights in the Samba code. Are there questions or comments on this talk? Yes?
So, Volker, you mentioned that this is not applicable for HTTP, and I would ask how complicated would it be to add it? Because if you want to handle RPC over HTTP, it could be interesting to use this infrastructure.
Technically, it would be possible to add HTTP to that as well. It's just not efficient because it has no buffering. So HTTP would work like, OK, get me one byte, get me another byte, get me another byte. Single byte reads from the socket until you find the length field in the HTTP header or content length or whatever. That's highly inefficient, so you have to add buffering to that. And once somebody, it works, but it's, yeah, as I said, it's inefficient.
It's inefficient.
Okay. Yeah.
Any other questions? Comments?
I hope I won't have to do that next time again. Yeah, but I mean, this has really helped us in restructuring WinBind. If you look at our SMB2 engine, that's coded around these ideas. So the SMB2 engine that Metzer has coded up is completely asynchronous using these techniques. So this is really the core of Samba programming right now. And if you want to go really deep in Samba, you need to take a look at this. And thank you.
Okay, thank you, Volker.